This is Tom Waddle on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast, sponsored by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
The 4 o'clock hour of Waddle and Sylvie is brought to you by your Chicagoland Acura dealers. Visit any of the 11 Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Acura dealers today. Test drive the 2020 RDX. Learn more at ChicagoAcuraDealers.com. So our next guest, Waddle, you originally met when you were a Bear, correct?
That is correct.
So he was an intern with the Bears.
With the athletic training staff.
And then got a full-time job with the Bulls in the Dynasty era under Chip Schaefer.
Yeah, we call that a promotion, yes. From working with us, the early 90s Bears, to working with the Bulls, that is a promotion.
And if you want to know who is Wally Blaze, who we're going to talk to here, you saw him numerous times in the documentary. And, you know, in the last episode, it was Game 6, 98. You would see Scotty go in and into the trainer's room and into the locker room, and then he'd be led out of the trainer's room. It was Wally who was leading the way. So he was always around. He did great work for the Chicago Bulls, worked for the Atlanta Hawks, and he joins Waddle and Sylvie right now on ESPN 1000. Hey, Wally.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Wally, doing well. how you been, my friend?
Tom, it's so good to hear from you. One of my all-time favorite locker room guys, just so everybody that's listening. Tom was just a joy to be around, especially when the dog days of mini camps and 2 days are going on. He was always a very entertaining athlete.
Is it also because he kept you in business because he was always hurt?
Oh, wow. Ouch.
He took a beating, that's for sure. I mean, I was just a kid from Chicago that, you know, at one point was able to walk into the Bulls training room any day I wanted to and the Bears. So, I mean, that was a dream come true to be around, you know, all my favorite athletes, both Chicago Bears and Chicago Bulls. It was a great time.
Now, Wally, I told these guys when the series came out, I think both on the air and off the air, that there are going to be some stories where I think I had a little bit of a preview, and I don't want to sell any secrets at the time, but you were kind of entrusted for a while of taking care of, for a lack of better terms, Dennis Rodman. Were you not in certain ways?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen the ESPN short, Wally and the Worm, The Amazing Adventures of Wally and the Worm, directed by Colin Hanks. It dives into how we first got put together. You know, it was in the 97 season. Dennis had a severely MCL sprained knee, and we were leaving on a long road trip, and Phil knew that if he left Dennis alone in Chicago in the cold, it was, you know, March, it was just gonna go downhill fast. So they arranged for him to go to Orange County and live at his agent Dwight Manley's house, and before I knew it, I was summoned to Phil's office and was told, "You're going with him." And that entire 30 for 30 kind of sums up like the cliff notes of what happened over those 2 weeks that are PG-13. We won't go into the full details of Wally and the Worm, but that's how it started. And we developed a really good friendship, to be honest with you. And he kind of responded to me, and Jerry and Phil saw that, and, you know, Phil being the genius he is, just basically then made me Dennis's sidekick for the rest of that season through the playoffs all the way into the last dance year.
So Wally, what was the key for him to relate to you? What was the key there?
Well, you want to know that the big thing with Dennis is he's the nicest, most giving person you've ever been around. I know he has this persona of this Jimi Hendrix rock star like attitude, but he's actually really quiet and introverted. And I think he gravitates towards people that have similar interests. And one of our big interests was Pearl Jam. And I met Dennis for the first time when he was playing for the Spurs, and I was a ball boy for the Bulls at the old stadium. And wow. he got in a fight with Stacey King, headbutted him, and then I think threw like the computers off the scores table. And all the kids that were with me handed me the key to the locker room, because back then you just locked the locker room and went upstairs and played the game. And then one of us had to run ahead and unlock the locker room with like a padlock on the door. And I had to go down to the locker room and let him in. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad. And the guy walks in like it was just a show, sat down and was like, hey, bro, how you doing? And we just started talking. You know, that's the kind of guy he was. And I think when that trip came along, he just wanted to show me a good time. Because when you can do everything and you've been doing everything with the Bad Boys, it kind of gets boring unless it's new and refreshing for somebody else. So every day was just an adventure. You know, do you want to go to a NASCAR race? Do you want to fly in a helicopter? Do you want to drive my Ferrari? It was just, it was a great time.
Did you ever have to chaperone dates with Dennis and Carmen Electra?
Yes. I found it funny. They told the story of Carmen getting picked up by Dennis. The first time that happened was if Michael came into the locker room at 9 and Dennis wasn't there yet, practice started at 10 and Phil's rule was you had to be dressed and standing at center circle ready to go, even if you weren't practicing. So even if it was a golf day for Michael, he would have his practice jersey on over his golf clothes and be standing at the center circle. Michael would say, go get your boy. And Dennis lived in a little tiny bungalow in Deerfield, like 4 minutes from the Berto Center. And I would drive over, and every morning he would be there. You know, some days I'd wake him up, some days he'd be up, some days the truck he drove would be parked on the front lawn and the keys would still be in the front door. He just never knew what was going to happen. And this particular morning I walk in and there's a king size mattress on the living room in front of a big screen TV, and there's Dennis laying there with a young lady with no clothes on. And I was like, wow. And we walk into Dennis's kitchen and I'm like, come on, man. I'm kicking the mattress. I'm like, you got to get out. We got practice. And he opens up his cupboard and he pulls out the Playboy edition with Carmen Electra on the cover. And I said, that's not her. He said, yes, it is. And I peeked around the corner and there she was. And I was like, yes, that is. So, and she was the nicest person I've ever met, like as celebrity wise, just super sweet. But she didn't care about being naked. That was for sure. And I drove back to the practice facility. Michael was sitting in the training room icing and said, where's your boy? I said, he's getting dressed right now. He goes, what was he doing? I go, this. And I threw the Playboy to him and Michael looked at him. Dennis walked by almost perfect timing by the training room door at the Berto Center. And Michael said, are you kidding me? And he goes, ask Wally. And then Michael looked up. He goes, I'm picking you up for practice tomorrow.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Wally Blaze is a Chicago guy, used to be the assistant trainer for the Bulls in the last three-peat. And that's what we had Carmen Electra on like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And she said that Michael always wanted to meet her, that like Michael was very impressed. And your story just confirmed that.
Oh, yeah. I remember when Dennis first kind of like started hinting he was going to meet her. We were playing at the Forum and he said, I met Carmen Electra at Billboard Live last night, some nightclub. And the whole team was like, yeah, right, yeah, right. So then all of a sudden when she finally, you know, ended up started dating him or seeing him and showing up in Chicago, the entire locker room wanted to meet her. I mean, are you kidding me?
Wow. That's incredible.
Wally, did you accompany Dennis to the wrestling event when he left and skipped practice the one day and went to the wrestling event?
No, you want to know what's so funny, and I tweeted this out while watching it, is everybody made a big stink. I remember back then, it was after we won game two, flew home, and had to have a practice. And as you know, well, even if it's a practice, you have to do it at the arena and so the media could attend. And Dennis didn't show up. And to be honest, I think they even knew he was going to do this, and he might have not been given permission, but he was still doing it. But the funny thing is the night before, or 2 nights before, we lost on June 3rd. My birthday is June 4th. And Dennis said, we're going to Vegas tonight for your birthday. And I said, come on, man. You know, this is the last season. We just lost game one. Let's just play these games. Let's win a championship. We'll go to Vegas for a week. He's like, no, man, I can't stay here. We had like a day in between games. I go, I'm not going. He goes, all right, we'll see. And he went to Phil and Jerry. Phil gave him permission to go and get out of town because, you know, just Dennis being in Salt Lake City wasn't a good idea. And next thing you know, Jerry Krause walks up and says, Phil gave Dennis permission and you have to go. And I'm like, okay. He's like, yeah, he hurt his thumb and you're going to treat his thumb on the whole plane ride. So Dennis had this thumb injury that he convinced them that I needed to be there to treat this thumb injury while he was, I don't know, standing at the craps table. So we flew to Vegas with an entire entourage of celebrities and rock stars. I think Billy Corgan was with us. I think Eddie Vedder might have been with us. Chelios was always with us.
Wow.
And we did this whole thing, came back, went to practice, shoot around, played the next game, won. Nobody said a word about us being in Vegas, but he went to the wrestling tournament, and everybody was all up in arms.
So what is that like, Wally? I mean, are you guys just gambling all night when that's going on in Vegas, or do you guys go to clubs as well?
It's I'll tell you what, the funny thing, that we also did the same thing in the 97 series. I think Billy Corgan told that story to somebody, how we took off and went to Vegas. We land, and whatever hotel was sponsoring Dennis's trip, they had more limos for us than there were people on the plane. We get off the plane, Dennis gets in his limo with Carmen, and the rest of us look at each other like, well, we're not just going to get in our own limo. So we all pile into one limo, and sure enough, Dennis almost had like a circuit. You know, like, think if you were one of the people, like, George Stranafello, his security guard for all those years, or Kelly Davis, you could probably hunt Dennis down pretty quickly because everybody knew his routine. He'd land, he'd go to the Hard Rock for a while, and then you'd run into some celebrity like Jeremy Piven or Cusack, and then you'd head across the street to the Gentleman's Club. Then he'd leave there and head over to like Mirage or one of the other ones, and it was just a nonstop, and then to this club, then the gambling some more. He made the most work of his limited time that he could get there. He milked every ounce of Vegas into every trip.
Now, Wally, when you look back, as you spent, what, 15 or 16 years as the head trainer for the Hawks, too, right?
Yes.
After Chicago. When you look back at your time with the Bulls and with Dennis and that second three-peat, is it almost surreal, all of that you experienced?
It's unbelievable. You know, me, Chip Schaefer, who was the head trainer at the time, and John Legionowski are all Chicago, born and raised kids. And for us to be part of that in our hometown, you know, it's one thing to go work for the Hawks. I understand, you know, Dominique Wilkins and its importance and Tre Rollins and Lou Hudson, but I didn't, you know, I'm not from Atlanta, you know, and I respected that. But to be at home with your team during that, I told somebody the other day, we had a film crew. Think about the greatest time in your entire life, and a professional film crew followed you for an entire year and filmed every second of that year, and then held it for 23 years, and then released it to the world. And you could just sit there and relive. It's crazy. We watch it, and you know all the guys on the team, you know, the Wenningtons, Kerr, Buschler, we'll all text each other on the side, like, can you believe this, man? You know, it's like you're reliving it. Like, you forget, you know, moments. And then you see it, and then the details come back of what really went on that day, and it's pretty incredible. I mean, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity that happened three times for me.
Going to say real quick, I was going to ask, what was your impression of Michael during that time?
From the very first time I met Michael, I thought he was like the greatest locker room guy you've ever met. You know, we've all played sports, whether it was high school, and you know, Tom, you played professionally. To have that guy that was just, you know, you hear the stories of like Walter Payton, you know, and got to meet him once or twice, and just how they have their charisma. Like, there is an aura about Michael Jordan. Every guy will say that. Like, the first time I met him, he was actually standing in the window behind me, and I just felt somebody there. It sounds weird, but I did. And I turned around, and there he was. And then so I made up an excuse why I had to go walk into that room, because I was like, this might be the only time I ever meet him, because he had retired. And he was just great. You know, hi, I'm Mike. And I was like, I know. And I know, like, there's a lot of heat, like, that he was, like, mean and bust guys' balls. And, like, my good friend Scott Burrell took the brunt of it. But, you know, that was just Michael. I mean, he also was the first guy to crack jokes and tell stories and start arguments about anything, you know. And that was what's so great about him. You know, the great thing about him is, as a trainer, he's the best person to ever have, because nobody's taking a day off if Michael Jordan's not taking a day off.
Right.
Nobody's spraining an ankle and going, oh, I can't go, I'm only 90%, when Michael is going. I mean, you see that final game six with Scotty, basically, you went and had back surgery like 2 days after that game ended. And he played that whole game because if Michael's playing, I'm playing. And it makes it easy from a coaching staff and a medical staff, because he's going to play. The guy never missed a game. And led the league in minutes played almost every year. So, I mean, when they talk about other players, that guy never got, quote-unquote, load management, and he was still the best.
Wally Blaze for another minute, the former trainer of the Chicago Bulls. You saw him in The Last Dance. So I was going to ask you, because you were featured a lot walking in and out of that locker room in Game 6, how close in your mind was it that Scotty went to the locker room and was not coming back into Game 6?
Every time. Me and Chip were just talking about this the other day. If we would have lost that game, there's no way I could have seen him being in Game 7, which probably would have changed the series. He was playing under excruciating pain, like Chip said, lack of mobility, lack of weakness. And you know, the way he kept going in, we'd do everything we could just to kind of calm it down. Because as Tom knows, when you have an injury, you have an injury. And there's adrenaline that helps calm it down, but you weren't making it go away. And then he would just come back on the court and suck it up. And, you know, that's all we were hoping for, is at least just to put him out there to kind of, as he said, be a decoy.
Wow. Wally, great stuff. These stories were fantastic. You're a great storyteller, and all the best. Waddle always speaks very highly of you.
It was fun to catch up with you, Wally.
Yeah, man, I was excited to hear from you. Sylvie, we're all rooting for you too, buddy, okay?
I appreciate it, Wally. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Wally. Stay in touch, brother.
Yeah, see you, Tom. Take care.
Take care.
There you go. So his name is Wally Blaze. Follow him on Twitter. He's a Chicago guy. Yeah. Grew up a huge Chicago sports fan. He did his internship with the Bears as a trainer.
Yeah.
And then he was great the guy. Assistant trainer under Chip Schaefer in the dynasty years. He's at Wally, W-A-L-L-Y, and the last name is Blaze, B-L-A-S-E. So yeah, Blaze.
He went from the Bulls and then was the head trainer at the Atlanta Hawks, I think, for 15 or 16 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Mellor's got a great montage of the best memories from The Last Dance. And then later, there's new audio from Karl Malone. So reliving The Last Dance, it's coming up next.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home. Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Waddle, a lot of listeners loved the Wally Blaze interview. Like one person said that he should get his own special. Some of those stories are really just completely, like, you would never believe it if you didn't hear about it. Like, oh yeah, sure, you went with Rodman after game one to Vegas, you know, when you guys were in Salt Lake City. Like, think about that fact. Like, you were saying how you had the WTF moment thinking about it, the technology, the internet. Yeah. That here's this Hall of Fame player who plays for the Bulls, and it's the last time they're going to be together, and they're down 0-1 in the between games. And then Dennis is like, let's go to Vegas on our off day. Think about that.
I know. It's crazy. I think Wally mentioned there was something that he did, Wally and the Worm. I don't know where you can find that.
It was a 30 for 30 short. Yeah. So maybe Tyler or Mellor, you guys could come up with a link, and we could retweet that. But Wally Blaze is his name, and he's a Chicago, born and raised in Chicago, and worked for the Bulls, was the assistant trainer under Chip Schaefer, and was basically Dennis Rodman's babysitter.
Yeah, I remember him telling me the story about walking in. I think that's the story I told you guys a long time ago about walking into Dennis's place, basically with the door open, and then a mattress in the living room with him and Carmen Electra naked. And Wally, I remember he had obviously was with the Bulls at the time. He had graduated from the Bears, and I remember seeing him somewhere at a time, and he was like, yeah, I got to tell you this story.
And I was like, so great.
I was like, no blanking way. He's like, yeah. It's like,
and how about Dennis, like a kid showing Wally the Playboy, saying, you know who's out there? That's her right there.
Yeah. So funny.
So Mellor put together this piece, and this now includes episodes 9 and 10. Audio Man, why don't you explain what we're about to hear?
Yeah, so everyone loved The Last Dance. We've been consumed by it for the last 5 weeks, 10 episodes. So I just put together some of the best moments, not just from the actual documentary, but also some of the better moments we've had on the station here on ESPN 1000.
That's a tribute to Michael Jordan's presence in American life as the greatest basketball player who ever lived.
Here they come. Here they come. Here he comes. Here he comes. Here he comes. Here he comes.
Michael played every game as if it was last. Every single game. There was never a day off.
Before Michael Jordan got to the Bulls in 1984, drugs were prevalent.
One of the articles I read was called the Bulls Traveling Cocaine Circus.
I never read that.
Accurate?
BJ Armstrong.
The professionalism that that group had, that Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, that was unparalleled. That was untouchable.
We've got Craig Elo.
Sometimes I would ask him, how did you do that? And he's like, I don't know, it just happens. So
straight up bitches. That's what they walked off like. Now we just kick your ass. Go ahead and go.
You are Isaiah frickin' Thomas, a great figure in the NBA, and you can't go back to the basic fundamental of sportsmanship. I think that sucks.
Looking back on it, of course we would have made a better decision. And so I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm saying you're right.
Straight up bitches.
Jerry Krause, the Bulls general manager, says, quote, organizations win titles, not players, end quote.
As you know, David, there was a misquote. What I said was that players and coaches alone don't win championships, that organizations do.
Bill Cartwright.
Jerry Krause works for Jerry Reinsdorf. The final decision he does not make.
Pippen started abusing Krause openly, you know, cursing him out on the bus.
Couldn't tolerate him anymore. Didn't respect him.
Pippen started berating Jerry Krause.
Charles Barkley.
I'm like, come on, Mr. Reinsdorf. The notion that little Jerry Krause broke up the Bulls, I think that was very disingenuous.
Under Dan Marley. What did you think when you heard Michael say that, how much Krause liked him?
I almost fell out of my chair.
I was like, you know what? I'm not going to f*** my summer up.
I felt like Scotty was being selfish, you know, worrying about himself as opposed to what his word was to the organization as well as to the team.
Terry Francona is our guest. When Michael was in the minors, you were his manager. Would he have made the majors?
I found out quickly when you told Michael no, he could find a way to make the answer be yes.
The next day when I get a call from Michael, he said, I don't know if Scotty's ever going to live this down.
It's always going to come back to haunt him at some point in some conversation. Pip knows better than that. It's one of those incidents where, you know, I wish it never happened. But if I had a chance to do it over again, I probably wouldn't change it.
John Starks joins us. They just hated you because you were a Knick.
I love Chicago. I don't know why they hate me.
I come to practice, Phil calls me and says, look, you know, Dennis wants to tell you something.
When Dennis wants to tell me something, I knew it's not something that I want to hear.
So Dennis says, I need a vacation. And I look at Phil and say, Phil, what do you mean, vacation? He says, he needs a vacation. He needs some time off to let loose. I say, look, Phil, let me tell you something, man. If anybody needs a vacation, I need a vacation.
Carmen Electra joining us. Do you guys have a night of escapades at the Berto Center?
We did. We at the practice facility.
A lot of people back down the bike. I didn't. I made it a point. I said, just tire him out.
It took a toll, and then resting him a little bit, and then the series changed. But it was a difference. And beating him down a little bit.
The glove. I had no problem with the glove.
First of all, I didn't know he's sick. And I thought he played a great game. Did everybody else know he was sick? I guess I was the last one to know.
And I remember him walking off the court.
He was like, don't ever talk trash to Black Jesus.
And that's when I stopped referring to him as Michael Jordan. And I always refer to him either as Jordan, Black Jesus, or that black cat.
Enjoy yourself, dog. You bitch. Y'all gave us the run for our money.
Yeah.
All right, take care. Thank you. Work on that golf game of yours.
Now everybody said I pushed off. The man was, his energy was going that way. I didn't have to push him that way. It's maddening, you know, because I felt like we could have won 7. I really believe that. We may not have, but man, just not to be able to try, that's something that, you know, I just can't accept.
Like, I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
And thank you to Meller for putting that together. That was awesome. Jason Hare joined us every step. and Coors Light. Thank you to them for their support with all of our coverage of The Last Dance, as it still is the gift that keeps on giving, Waddle, because of all the disputes going on with it. Jason Hayward was on with us earlier, and he was even amazed by, you know, how Horace Grant and Scottie Pippen are upset. And, you know, we have audio of Karl Malone. He did not want to participate in The Last Dance.
Right.
There was a an E60 piece where he was asked about Michael, and we got to play that for you coming up next. So,
Job, Meller.
Yeah, great work, Meller. That was very, very good. If you want to weigh in, 312-332-3776. We're also going to put together a list of our guilty pleasure television shows for our Final Four today, and also the Getting Back to Sports plan. We are guest free the rest of the way, and if you want to participate, 332-3776.
What is your name, please?
Waddle and Sylvie.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
While Waddle was watching a new Mark Ruffalo show about identical twins.
What's it called again? I know
what you did last summer.
I know this much is true.
Most of us were watching Game 6, the movie, last night on ESPN. Right, Meller? You watched it? Tyler, did you watch it?
I dove in late.
Pieces of it, yeah.
I watched a little bit at the beginning, and then I made sure to watch the last, 10 minutes where it was like the final, 42 seconds of the game.
Yeah. And so for those who are, I've seen the game, what's the difference? They use, so the footage that you saw, Jason Hare, who was the director of The Last Dance, was telling us, and he was bragging how some of the footage that they used on these brand new cameras for NBA Entertainment that they were shooting behind the scenes made it look like that stuff just happened yesterday. So if you watch the normal feed from NBC from those cameras in 1998, that is standard definition TV.
Yeah.
The way they were shooting it from the NBA Entertainment cameras, those were HD cameras. And what I was telling most of my friends and anyone who was watching it, what made it cool to me was I've never watched Michael Jordan play basketball in HD TV. I've seen him live. I've seen him up close and in color that way. But I've never watched a Michael Jordan basketball game or, that Dynasty Bulls team in HD. So that was really cool.
Yeah, I did not watch it. I've told you this in the past. Over the last several weeks, if not months, I just still have not felt compelled to watch old games. Like, I caught myself watching Game 6, the clinching game, 2017 NBA Finals, where the Warriors beat the Cavs. I watched the entire second half of that game, but that's it. I haven't watched anything.
It was a little dizzying, the angles, because, again, these aren't the television cameras. These are the guys who are shooting the footage for the documentary back in the day, but it was like a video game. It was very, very cool. You know what else was cool, Waddle, is most of the timeouts they showed you Phil Jackson's huddles.
Really?
So like after Michael hits the shot with how many seconds there were left, like 3 or 4 seconds, they go to the huddle and they're talking about defending. Whether or not to use their delay a game. Tony Kukoc was, covering the inbound ball. Should he use his delay a game? And Michael's like, let's not use our delay a game. They think we're going to use our delay a game. So Phil's like, okay, we're not going to use our delay of game. But it was relatively calm.
That's cool.
Like, yeah, it was. That's why it was good, because we got more. John Greenberg did a piece in The Athletic, and I had very, very, very few complaints about The Last Dance. Very, very. And I wouldn't even call it a complaint. But the way it was phrased to me, Greenberg said, what would you like differently done in The Last Dance? And at first I'm like, nothing. I'm good with it. The project is great, and I loved it. And then so he's like, what's one thing? And then I started thinking about it. I thought there would be just a few more behind-the-scenes moments, like some of those in-the-huddle moments.
You mean on the court, but in the huddle?
Right, or behind the scenes. Like, just like Hard Knocks, where, like, the more, you know, Michael with the baseball bat and the cigar, more of that sort of stuff. More of the old footage telling the story rather than the interview. But that's not even a complaint to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that that could have been on your wish list, but Christmas was still great even if you didn't get that.
Yes, yeah, I'm totally good with it.
You know, you bring it up, Sylvie, and it's the one thing I was thinking about, and again, look, the series was great. I enjoyed it for everything that it was, but I do wonder, had Jason had the time that they were actually expecting to have to complete this, how different episodes 9 and 10 would have been? Because we heard from him, you know, throughout the entirety of the series that they were in a crunch. They did not have episodes 9 and 10 done. They were in a, you know, in a rush to get it done. And so I do wonder, like, I have to believe that had he had some opportunity to really, you know, work with it the way he wanted to, it would have been a little bit different the last two episodes.
It's a good question if we ever get him on again. I was asking Jacob Nitzberg from ESPN Stats and Info because I don't know when Carmen and I recorded a podcast yesterday about the unanswered stories of The Last Dance. And one of my unanswered questions was, do we really appreciate Michael Jordan's final performance? Because we always, it seems like, okay, they won. That was number six. Now let's focus on, are they coming back for number seven? They were showing the post-game show yesterday during this movie edition of Game 6. And that's what it was. No one was really asking Michael any questions about the end of the game. Michael Jordan scored 45 points. He scored more than half of his team's points. In the last 41 seconds, Michael drove to the layup, drove to the basket in traffic when the Bulls were down three, scored to cut it to one. The ball goes into Karl Malone. Michael steals the ball from a Hall of Famer, recovers it, drives down to the other side, and then makes that jump shot against Brian Russell. Like, with all that into play, scoring more than half its team's points in an elimination game to win a championship, to hit the game-winning shot with less than 10 seconds, to get that steal, like, where did that game rank? And, like, Nitzberg told me that there are a lot of those metrics that they can't really go back to, but he did tell me that Jordan is one of only four players to score more than half of its team's points in any NBA Finals win. And he's the only one to do it in an NBA Finals clinching win.
I was going to say, the other thing about that series that I had not remembered was how few points that the Jazz scored earlier in that series.
Oh, when they had 54 or something like that? Points. Something like that. Yeah, and then the final scores are in the 80s. You know, they're struggling. It's the fourth quarter, you're looking up. The fourth quarter, when it's in the 70s, that's like early third quarter these days.
Right.
Like 70-something to 70-something, it was like 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
And that wasn't just the fact that, you know, you're shooting less threes. Obviously, that's happening. But the pace of play, too. The Bulls were one of the slowest teams in the NBA that year. And that was because Michael Jordan was older, and he had played so many minutes at that point.
They were exhausted. Michael shot poorly in that game. As great as he had 45, and he scored late in the steal, he did not shoot it well. And you're right, Mellor, they were running on fumes. Every jumper was short.
Yeah, and that's just another testament to how great Jordan was. Like, physically, he in the final series, you know, he was not, you know, the Michael Jordan that we, you know, remember. But mentally, and what he was able to do with the fadeaway and just, you know, sheer will and slowing down the game, what he was doing, that's the, you have to really watch and be like, that's an incredible man.
Yeah.
Did you, Waddle, did you hear the mailman?
I did.
The Karl Malone sound? So tell the backstory. What is this, from an E60 piece from 2019?
Yes, yes. I don't know the exact details as to why they were interviewing Karl Malone at that point, but he was asked specifically about Michael Jordan, and you will hear the question in the audio, and, you know, he doesn't even want to address the topic.
So when I say the name Michael Jordan, what comes to mind?
Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan.
Well,
what else I need to say? Thank you. Go ahead.
So talk to me about the Game 6 Finals in Utah when he stole the ball.
Why do I have to? But I tell you this, I'm all man, and I accept the responsibility for not winning one, and we was there.
we just happened to be playing the Chicago Bulls, which wasn't just Michael Jordan, by the way. And I have the utmost respect for Michael, but I never thought I was playing Michael Jordan. I was playing the Chicago Bulls. But let's not, you know, everybody say this person was a bad man and all that. Well, yes, I give them respect. But I got a set of them. I'm a man. And I was a bad son of a bitch, too. So that's how I look at that. And that's who I am. Maybe in my older years, I can call it that bluntly. But I'm just calling it like I see it.
He was smoking a cigar, too, during that interview, wasn't
he? Yeah, he's got smoking and puffing mid answers, too.
I got no problem with that. You know what I thought was cool from that? The final episode is how Karl Malone went on the team bus. I couldn't believe that. I was shocked by that. That's tough to do. They got the trophy in there. They're drenched in champagne.
Yeah, before as well. I didn't realize that that was kind of protocol after the games, even outside the locker rooms, where guys would wait and then exchange pleasantries, however brief they were, and then move on. Like, that was really interesting to me as well.
So Karl Malone, him and Horace Grant can go on vacation together.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
312-332-3776. We'll go over the rules with Waddle coming up next. But because Aunt Becky, is it Laura Loughlin? That's her name.
Lori
Loughlin. Aunt Becky got us thinking about Full House. So we came up today with a final four topic of your favorite four guilty pleasure shows. Waddle totally peed down his leg during this topic when we did movies. We'll try to make sure that he plays by the rules coming up next.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
All right, there's football to discuss next hour. There's also a return to sports, the latest on what's going there, negotiations. But let's establish the rules here. So we still do the Final Four from time to time. And today, because of Aunt Becky being in the news, we were thinking of Full House. Full House is one of those shows that people love. It's a guilty pleasure show. It's like you would never say Full House is one of the best shows ever. It would never be that critically
acclaimed.
Hey, guys,
you want to come over and grab some beers and watch some episodes of Full House?
Yeah, you couldn't do that, really. Right. But, you know, you would be at home, and you would admit it that, oh, boy, I loved Full House. Now, that's not me. Full House was never my cup of tea. I was never into, like, it wasn't. Look, you know me. I'm willing to admit anything. But Full House was never in my wheelhouse. So this isn't like, you can come on this, Waddle, and say, one of my guilty pleasure shows was Seinfeld.
Was Miami Vice? That's not count. That doesn't count.
Miami Vice was pretty popular, wasn't it? I mean, yes. Yeah.
I'm sure I'm going to get some grief for some of what I've listed here, but I think that they all qualify as
do you want me to lead the way first on this? Because the last time
you're definitely better at this than us, Sylvie.
Because when I started saying Taylor Swift, you guys were all laughing about what was it, favorite guilty pleasure songs, and I was mentioning Taylor Swift. Yeah, like that. That's a guilty like Never Been Kissed for movie. Like whoever says to another guy, you know what movie I love? That Drew Barrymore movie, Never Been Kissed, when she goes back to high school. But you know what, damn it? Every time that's on, I'm watching it and I'm not watching anything else. Yeah. What a love story. Yeah. What a love story.
Oh, great.
Here's my my favorite four, my final four guilty pleasure television shows. It could be modern or it could be something in the past. Number four, we go to HDTV, and it's Love It or List It. You have a couple, and they're living in a home, and they need to remodel that home. And the woman comes in, and she redecorates, but then
they also look for
a new house. The version that I watch on the weekends.
I know, but there's two versions. There's David and the brunette.
The bald guy and the English-speaking woman. Or she's where is she from?
I think from Louisiana, somewhere in Louisiana. Go
that's,
ahead.
That's.
I don't know if that qualifies as a guilty pleasure.
Really?
I feel like
that's what is they called? A DIY.
Yeah, I think anything on HDTV.
Is that do it yourself or is that HDTV?
Do you like to do it yourself, Silly?
I think, look, it's very formatic.
I'm cool with it.
It's always the same. You know that first house they see, they're never going to buy. The second house, they're never going to buy. Then maybe the third house, but probably the fourth house. And then the big drama at the end, are you going to love it or list it? And they pause, and it's awesome, and I love it. Number three is Below Deck. It's really one of the only modern reality shows that I watch with my wife. It's about the crew on a yacht. And they cater to a bunch of rich people who always rent out the yacht for like a week's vacation. And they always make fun of the clients, and it pisses me off because these people are paying big money for them to work. And there's shenanigans going on behind the scenes and lots of fights, Waddle. So it's really my only current reality show that I say that I like. Number two, you guys may balk on this with number two, but I DVR'd this, or I was in front of the TV every Sunday night, Sex in the City. I had to see what the gang was up to, you know, where they would go and what trouble they would get into, the dating lifestyles of these. Was Mr. Big the way that she was going to go, or would she go with Aiden?
Did you ever daydream that you were Samantha?
What movie is that from again?
Jonah Hill. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, right?
Yeah, yes, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. That was so great. And then number one, I posted it on Twitter. It's Beverly Hills 90210. I think that's the only answer here.
You can hum. Can't you hum the theme show or theme music?
Humming. It's da 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 da.
I think you just made Merck's nipples hard. If Merkin's listening right now, he's excited.
That
chocolate chip cookie for Merkin.
Yeah. Head to the peach pit for a chocolate chip cookie. Nat's going to serve you up one.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, here you go. You ready for me?
Yeah.
You ready? All right. Number four is Knott's Landing.
Yes, Nicolette Sheridan in her prime.
Boom, shakalaka. Nothing else needs to be said, Meller. Am I right?
A 10-year-old Jeff Meller is co-signing that one 100%.
Yeah. Listen, a 16-year-old or however old I was at the time, I'm all in that.
I never watched that. Well, I mean, Knott's Landing.
Into the show, that is. Yeah.
What was it about?
Knott's Landing was an area where people lived. And I think wasn't.
They were affluent, let's say that.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to go back and watch some of it. It's
okay.
Good. I mean, it was good.
79 to 93 had a big 15-year run. Wow.
Yeah, I caught the tail end.
It was not some, you know, out of the way show. It was a hit, especially when Nicolette Sheridan was on it.
CBS, right?
It was I believe
CBS,
so. I yes.
If memory After they, serves,
don't you? Was it? I can't for whatever.
After
reason,
Dallas, was it like? Did it have a this, run where they kind of like overlapped?
Or I have this feeling that like big voice announcer after the ball game. Don't forget to tune in to Knott's Landing tonight at 9.
Well, that was Jack Buck during World Series promos telling you to watch Knott's Landing.
Number three is Charlie's Angels. Do I need to really elaborate?
No. No,
I mean, look,
yeah, of course, when you were, yeah, and you, how old
Tom
were you
Bosley
when that
was the best. No, I'm just kidding. What?
Tom, you know he's from here.
I did not know that, no, but that's cool. But the fact that Tom Bosley was from Chicago isn't what had my attention.
It's
it was
the
Farrah,
Angels.
Kate Jackson, and Jocelyn, what was her name, Smith? What was her?
Jacqueline Smith.
Jacqueline Smith, yeah.
Yeah, so. We had the poster.
Number two is Jackass. Like, you know,
oh, that's good. Good call by you.
Yeah, I mean,
what a great show.
Even as an adult, okay,
great.
Like, it was coming. I would make my wife when the movies came out as well, and because obviously the series was the starter. But when the movies came out, my wife would come into the room, and I would just be dying laughing like a child, and I would make her sit there and watch it. But the beginning of the series, Jackass was always the... And number one, as I told you guys the other day, SpongeBob SquarePants. Like, when my oldest, was young, like, I'd put it on, and she'd walk out of the room and go do something. And I was transfixed on the couch watching SpongeBob SquarePants. I watched SpongeBob SquarePants like it was Charlie's Angels or Knott's Landing or Miami Vice. Religiously.
Cool.
It was a show for me.
All right, boys, we're up against the clock, so why don't you rattle yours off?
All right, so you guys may take umbrage with my number four. That's why I made it my number four, Friends. Some people.
Yeah, you can't do.
What do you mean? A lot of people.
One of the most popular shows in the history of network TV.
That's why I made it number four. Anyway, moving on. Number three for me, Dawson's Creek. A young James Vanderbeek, Katie Holmes, Michelle Williams, and Pacey. Gotta love them. Number two for me is Grey's Anatomy. I don't go out of my way to watch it, but whenever my wife has it on, I always get sucked in. So I will say Grey's Anatomy is my number two favorite guilty pleasure TV show. And my number one, how could you forget the season finale, which spawned a parody and memes across Twitter and every social media platform. The OC, the season finale where the brother gets shot with Jason Derulo's what did you say, making that song famous.
What you say?
Exactly.
Love that song.
I was going to add Very Cavalier.
Well, that was on my list, Mr. Okay. Waddle.
Oh, nice, Tyler.
I have Very Cavalier. That was my number two. So my number four was Zoe 101. Which is an old Nickelodeon show that you guys probably have never heard of.
Never heard of.
Hannah Montana coming in at number three for me. I don't know if you guys remember
age
that. That's
is
Miley,
showing
Miley
here.
Cyrus
yes,
right there. Yeah, my number two I shared with you, Very Cavalier. Number one, not The Bachelor, not The Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise.
Oh, you're filling the Abdallah role yep. very nicely. Mm-hmm. There you go. All right, well there's done. Our guilty pleasure television shows. That was a lot of fun. I want to talk some football and back to sports. It's all coming up. We're guest-free in the 5 o'clock hour, and we're up in 2 minutes.